This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Go. Okay, so what I've chosen to do tonight is I've heard most of this is built on a shir that I heard from Rabbi Reisman, Rabbi Israel Reisman of Torah Vadas. And it's some very beautiful ideas, a few other ideas I've collated and pulled together, and I think a very interesting theme emerges, which I hope will help us in Aseret Yemei Teshuva as we approach Yom Kippur. What we're going to do is focus on a few of the insertions, a few of the additions that we make to our tefillah this time of year. So let's take a look at the first one. The first addition to our tefillah is, of course, Zochreinu L'chaim. So in Shemoneh Esra, in the very first bracha, we add in the words Zochreinu L'chaim Melech of Yitzchayim, etc. Now, you should know that this insertion is very problematic. Why? It was introduced by the Gaonim. The Gaonim were those giants who lived between the time of the Gemara and the Rishonim. So the Gemara was closed around the, say, 5th century. And for the next 500 years or so, that was called the period of the Gaonim until the Rishonim began in the 10th, 11th century. Now, they introduced this phrase and all of these insertions. The trouble is, adding the words Zochreinu L'chaim at this stage in the Shemoneh Esra seems to violate an open Gemara. The Gemara says, if you look at your sheet, the Gemara in Brachas Lamed Dalet says, Omer Rav Yehuda, Le'olam al yishal adam sarchov, lo b'shalosh rishonos. A person shouldn't make requests in the first three brachas, v'lo b'shalosh achronos, and not in the last three. Why? So the Gemara explains, we know that there are three sections to Shemoneh Esra, right? The first section is Shevach, is praising Hashem. The middle section is Bakoshos, and the last section is Hodah, is giving thanks to Hashem. So the Gemara says, don't ask for anything other than in the middle section, not in the first section, not in the last section. So the Gemara, and yet Zochreinu L'chaim, which is clearly a request, is put not just in the first section, but in the first bracha of the first section. There are three brachas in the first section. So why is that? So the Rishonim deal with this question. And Tosfos there in the Gemara Brachas, if you look at the next box, he quotes Rabbi Haigon, Rabbeinu Chananel as well, and says there's a difference between Sarche Yochid and Sarche Rabbim. An individual shouldn't request. Avol Tzorche Tzibur She'al, says Tosfos. Fine. And it comes out that lahalacha, a person in Zochreinu L'chaim shouldn't have thoughts, his kavanah shouldn't be a personal request, but it should be Tzorche Rabbim. And if a person does think personal request, A, it's inappropriate, and B, it could be a hefsek. Okay. The Tosfos HaRosh, by the way, says a bit different. He says that by us turning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and saying, I need you, that's the fact that we're saying, that is the biggest request. That is the biggest praise to Hashem. Okay. Now, this is the problem. If you're in management or leadership or you run a company or whatever it may be, the effective leadership strategy is not firefighting. It's sort of long-term planning, and if you've got a problem, you firefight, but isn't it better to avoid the problem in the first place? So why put Zochreinu L'chaim in the first section of the Shemoneh Esra and then come up with answers, you know, Tzorcheh Rabbim, and there's a difference in this, and it's really a praise to Hashem that we need him, etc., etc.? Wouldn't it be more simple to just take it and put it in the middle section of the Shemoneh Esra? Why put it in the first section and, you know, have to come up with all answers what it's doing there? So that is a question I saw in the name of Rabbi Avraham Yitzchok Bloch. He's one of the Telzer of Shivas from the early 20th century. And he comes up with a magnificent answer. In short, this is what he says. When we say Zochreinu L'chaim, everyone has a slightly different thing in mind. You ask people, what do they mean when they say we want life? Now, I'll tell you, and I'll give you an example. In our home, Erev Shabbos, there's a lot of chulent being eaten. Yeah, my wife makes a lovely chulent. And Erev Shabbos, the kids come back from school, and as they come home, that's their staple. So a year or two ago, I remember coming downstairs and seeing my son sitting there on the settee, an hour or two before Shabbos, eating a bowl of chulent. He was then 8 or 9 years old, sitting there eating a bowl of chulent. and reading his magazine. I come to the kitchen, he looks up at me and he goes, "This is the life. This is the life." Which, you know, Mr. Shemi should continue to eat children and read for many years. Now, for some people, Chaim could mean a steaming bowl of children and reading a life magazine, a comic. For others, it could be you could be swinging from a hammock, sipping a pina colada, yeah, by a swimming pool. Everyone has their own image of what Zachreinu L'Chaim could mean. Says Rav Bloch, we specifically put it in the first brach of Shemoneh Esrei to remind us what we're actually asking for. What are we davening for? We're davening for Chaim in the brach of the Ovis, i.e., that we aspire to life as live, as sort of dictated to us, as transmitted to us by the Ovis. We're trying to emulate the life which they have taught us to live. That's what we're saying. That's what the Gemara says. Mosai yagiu maisai lemaisai avosai. When am I going to emulate the ways of my forefathers? So Zachreinu L'Chaim is not a personal. There's a machlokes rishonim. Does it mean olam haba, olam hazeh? But the poshut understanding is that it's life in this world in order to earn olam haba. And how do I do that? By living up to the life that was transmitted to us by the Ovis. That's really what we mean. Now, what comes out of that is that in the very opening brach of Shemoneh Esrei, we refer back to the fact that we have Ovis. That we come from good stock. With the sons of Avram, Yitzchak and Yaakov, the Emohis. So we're saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we've got a special connection. We've got a unique relationship with you. That's what we're saying. Okay, let's park that for the minute. That's number one. Number two, another change in Shemoneh Esrei is, of course, we change from Hokel HaKadosh to HaMelech HaKadosh. Now, this is probably the most important change. What's the raya that this is the most important change? Yeah, because if you mess up and you say Hokel HaKadosh, you got to start again. Fine. Now, we know that there's a similar change in the brach of Hashiva Shefteinu Kavrishayinu. Instead of saying Melech Oyev Soko Mishpot, you say HaMelech HaMishpot. Now, we know that Nusach Minag Ashkenaz, the Ramah Paskans, if you mess up and you don't say HaMelech HaMishpot, and you say Melech Oyev Soko Mishpot, it's not the end of the world, you don't go back. But the Beis Yosef doesn't hold like that. The Beis Yosef argues and says that if a person still says Melech Oyev Soko Mishpot, he's got to go back. Now, I understand, I haven't looked into this, but I understand it's a machlokes between Rabbi Avadia and the Kaf HaChaim, what, you know, halacha lemaisa is for Sfaradia. But either way, the Beis Yosef does paskin that if a person says Melech Oyev Soko Mishpot, he's got to go back, like if you and I were to say Hokel HaKadosh instead of HaMelech HaKadosh. The question is why? What is so bad about saying Hokel HaKadosh? If we didn't say HaMelech HaKadosh, why are we going to repeat the whole Shemoneh Esrei? So, let me tell you something I heard from Rabbi Reisman, which I think brings out this point that I'm trying to develop very, very beautifully. There's a famous drasha of the Ran. The Ran in Drasha Yud Aleph says that there is two types of mishpat. There is mishpat Sanhedrin and mishpat HaMelech. What does that mean? Mishpat Sanhedrin means that if you were to take a question to a dayan, to a rav, a poysek, or whatever, what would he do? He'd open up a Shulchan Aruch, or he'd reference a Shulchan Aruch, and he'd say, this is the halacha. He's guided by the four halakim in Shulchan Aruch. And so to a Beis Din, so to, that's how we live. A melech, however, has a different system. He has something called Mishpat HaMelech. What does that mean? If it were normative halacha, he's got much more flexibility, sometimes lahaka, sometimes the chumrah. Sometimes it's more lenient, sometimes it's stricter. What's an example of that? Perhaps the most famous example is with David HaMelech. So David HaMelech, after the Maisa with Bathsheba, Nosan HaMavi comes along, and he rebukes David HaMelech. And he tells him the famous marshal. He says to him there was a very rich farmer who had huge amounts of livestock, and he had a neighbor who was very poor, had one little lamb. And this rich man was making a big party, and he decided to, instead of taking one of his own animals, he would take the lamb belonging to his poor neighbor. He took it, shechted it, and fed his guests. And David HaMelech was so incensed, the pasuk says, it's the bottom of your page, the very bottom box, Vayichaf David Ma'oid, The person who does this is a ben moves. It's chayav misa. And then Nosson said, atzo ha'ish, etc., etc. Why? Why on earth is he ben moves? Why is he chayav misa? In halacha, a person steals, you've got to pay back. So is it kefel, is it dalad v'hei, is it four or five? There's halachas about that. But nowhere does it say that if you steal, you're going to be chayav misa. Elamai, David HaMelech, is acting in his role as Melech, and Mishpat Sanhedrin is not being applied, but Mishpat HaMelech is being applied. That was the Chumrah, but a king can go be lenient as well. With Shimi ben Gera, he decided not to kill him there and then. So it can be applied both ways. What we're saying on the Yom Neroim is we're begging HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't apply Mishpat Sanhedrin to us, but apply Mishpat HaMelech. Because Mishpat Sanhedrin is very limited. You're limited, and you know, if a person slips up, these are the consequences. End of story. There's no flexibility. We're saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't judge us with that sort of system, but rather apply the Mishpat HaMelech, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu can show much more flexibility. And that's why we say throughout Davening, for example, we say, Al tovei b'mishpat simonu, ki lo yitzdak lefonecha kol chai. We said in Slichas this morning. We don't want the regular mishpat. In the famous the words of Bein Melitz Yosher, what do we say? Bein Melitz Yosher mumagit pesha. V'tzakenu b'mishpat. What type of mishpat? Hamelech ha-mishpat. We keep asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We want. You know, if you think about it, you go. We say the words Zecher Bris Avraham v'Akeid Asi Yitzchok. Now you go to a court case. That seems to be such an inappropriate thing to say. Imagine you go to a court case and you go up to the judge, and before the proceedings begin, you say, "By the way, weren't you in law school with my Zecher? Don't you remember? You know, you." That's what we're saying. Zecher Bris Avraham, Akedas Yitzchak. Do you remember my Alter Zeder was this and this? It's not appropriate to say that. There's a Cheshen Mishpat. There's a rule. There's Yeridaya. There's Ebenezer. There's Zerachaim. The answer is we're trying to invoke Mishpat HaMelech. Rabbi Reisman tells a story. A cute story. He says that one time he was driving in Williamsburg in the warehouse area, and he was coming back from a chasna, from a wedding late at night, and he made an innocent error that he drove down a one-way street the wrong way, and a policeman happened to be there, and he pulled him up, and I don't know exactly what the details were, but he had to go to court. And he said, you know, I didn't normally do this, and there was no markings. Nowhere was it indicated that this is a one-way street. And the policeman agreed, but so he tweeted, took photos, but you know, maybe they shouldn't suddenly come along and put some signs up. Anyway, he gets his court case, the date, and a week or two before the court case, he gets a phone call. So the guy calls up, is that Rabbi Reisman? Yeah. Who is this? Doesn't matter. He says, what date is your court case? So Reisman said, it's January the 10th. So he goes, hang on a moment. He heard some papers flicking, and he says, change it. That's not a good date. Postpone the case. Who is it? Doesn't matter. Strange. Fine. Nothing to lose, so he changes the date. He gets a new date, and a week or two before the next date, he says, hello, Rabbi Reisman, yeah? Who is this? It doesn't matter. When's the next date? So he said, March the 10th. Looks through. Perfect. Keep this date. Who is it? Doesn't matter. Fine. Very strange. He goes to the courtroom. Now, I don't know what experience any of you have had with the court proceedings. I hope very little. But I would imagine you go to the courtroom, it's quite a nervy type of feeling. You know, even if it's quite a minor offense, you know, a traffic offense. But it's... where Reisman gets closer when, you know, you're waiting online for your case. I guess each case is a few minutes and you're approaching the bench. And suddenly he looks up and he sees the judge and he recognizes him. This guy goes to his Motzei Shabbos Novi Shir. Rabbi Reisman gives a very famous shir in America. 1,500 people or so come Motzei Shabbos. He recognizes this guy. He must have mentioned it once in the shir or in the Shabbos Shudas and Shul. And this guy must have heard, and he knows he's on the traffic judge and he's on the panel or whatever it may be. And therefore he called Rabbi Reisman. But Rabbi Reisman says when he saw the guy for the first time sitting there, you know, he thought, whether he's going to get off or not, he just felt relaxed. I'm going to get a fair hearing. He'll understand, you know, my language. So it so happened he did get off. The Rav Rosen came to the bench and he said, what happened? I was driving down the one-way street, but there were no signs. I didn't realize that. And the policeman agreed to him, but so he says, case dismissed. Yeah, and they said the next guy says obviously didn't go to the novishir because he was guilty. But the point, he felt relaxed. That's what we're saying when we say Hamelech HaMishpat. Again, what is the theme that emerges from there? That we're saying, Ta'kadosh Baruch Hu, that we have a unique relationship with you. That don't just judge us arbitrarily or just don't apply the fixed rules. Just look at the bigger picture. Apply Mishpat Sanhedrin. Apply your flexibility. Okay, that's number two. Let's move on quickly to number three. Now, this is also quite well known. This I saw in the writing of Rabbi Emanuel Bernstein. He's written a beautiful sefer on tshuva. So he says this, quite a well-known idea, but I think, again, it brings home the point I'm trying to make. Throughout the Rosh Hashanah and also the Yom Kippur davening, we keep using the phrase uvachein. Uvachein, uvachein, uvachein the whole time. Where does this come from? So the Avudram says the word uvachein comes from Megillas Esther. It's a borrowed term. When Esther went in front of the Melech, she says, Uvachein ovo el ha-melech. So just like she went in front of the king and took her life in her hands, so too we come in front of our Kodesh Baruch Hu in the Yom Neroim with our life in our hands. Good. The question is this. There are hundreds of cases in Tanakh where an individual is coming in front of a Melech. I mean, if you think about it, every time Moshe and Aaron went in front of Paro, that's going in front of a Melech, and they took their life in their hands. So why do we dafka take a phrase from this incident of Esther coming in front of Achashverosh? So, Rabbi Bernstein said the following. What was special about this incident? Esther HaMalka said to Mordechai, yes, I'll go to Achashverosh. But sumu olai, make sure the whole of Klal Yisrael fast on my behalf. When I go, I'm not going representing myself. I'm representing the whole of Klal Yisrael. What she's saying is that I'm going b'koyach hatzibur. I'm going sort of as part of this big entity called Klal Yisrael. Because you can achieve a lot more when you attach yourself to a tzibur like Klal Yisrael. The total is way, way bigger than the sum of the individual parts. That's what we're drawing on during the Yom Neroim. It's therefore, to a degree, important that we think, to what extent can I help the tzibur? You know, the Baal Emus, so they always say, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says about this the whole time, the best pass, if you like, on the Yom Neroim is to be mezakeh the rabbim. To think, what can I do? What qualities, what kalim, what tools has HaKadosh Baruch Hu given me that I can help the tzibur? That's what it means by uvachein. Interestingly, the gematria of the word tzibur, Sadi Beis Vav Reish, is 298, which is the same gematria as Rachamim. When you want to draw Rachamim, help the Tzibur. Now, and that's why, by the way, famously with the Shunamis, when she says, Sadi works, Sadi is 90, Beis is 2, Vav is 6, Reish is 298.
What's the
word
Tzibur? Is
Sadi, Beinoni, Rashi? Right. Yeah, it's made up of everything. Yeah. So when we say uvachein, we're referring to the fact that we're part of a big tzibur and we're going b'kach of the tzibur. You get away with things when you're part of a tzibur that you wouldn't ordinarily do when you're on your own. There's a famous anecdote. I'll tell you quickly. Famous anecdote. I apologize if you've heard before, which brings out this point very well. That cast your minds back to when you last did a public exam, a school exam, right? You're sitting in a massive hall, and there's hundreds of boys, hundreds of students, girls, whatever, taking the exam. So imagine the following. The invigilator stands up, and he announces that you've got 3 hours to do this paper. And he says to the students, he says, half an hour before the end, I'm going to give you half an hour warning, then a 10-minute warning, and then I'm going to tell you to put your pens down. Anyone who continues to write at the end, their paper is disqualified. You may start, good luck. After 2.5 hours, he gives his half an hour warning, he gives his 10-minute warning, and at the end he says, put your pens down, please, that the time is up. And everyone puts their pens down, apart from one kid at the back, who continues to furiously scribble away. And he does that for half an hour, by which time there's no one left in this whole exam room, other than the invigilator at the front, and this kid at the back. By which time, after half an hour, he's finished. So very, he nonchalantly walks to the front, and he's getting ready to give in his paper. So the invigilator looks at him and says, "You heard me loud and clear. I told you that you have 3 hours for this paper. Anyone who continues to write is disqualified. You can't submit your paper." So the kid squares up, pulls his shoulders back, and says to him, "Do you know who I am?" So the guy, the invigilator, says, "I don't care who you are. I'm not taking your paper." He says, "Do you know who my father is?" So he goes, "I don't know who your father is. I don't care who your father is." Then he looked at him and said, "But do you know my name?" So the invigilator said, "No." Whereupon the kid takes the paper, he thrusts it in the middle of the pile, and says, "Good!" And then runs out. So what does it mean? It wouldn't be able to happen nowadays.
It's a true story.
It's a well-known story. Berowine always says all his stories are true, it's just that some of them haven't happened yet. So it could be this is one of those. But the point is this. As an individual, it's unlikely to get away with things. When you're part of a tzibur, there's some sort of safety in numbers. That's why the Shonami says, "B'soich ami ani yesh eves." I don't want to be singled out. You sort of get carried through on the koach of the tzibur. But again, on the Yom Neroim, we're drawing on the fact that we are a tzibur, and we've got a special connection with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Okay, now let's just finish off with the last insight. The tefillah of Aleinu. It's a strange thing. Yeah.
Boys 10 or 100 or 400.
In school, Rabbi Hartman always tells the boys, he says, "Your Klal Yisrael is Hasmonean." In other words, this is for you, Hasmonean is Klal Yisrael. That's whatever tzibur you can contribute to, your shul, your local chesed organization, that is Klal Yisrael for you.
No, but I think one's dabbling in a tzibur, is it more meritorious if it's 400 rather than 200 rather than 20? Or
Whether the shul you daven it, I see. I don't know, there's a concept of Rogam Hadras Melech. Whether the numbers, I don't know. Aleinu. Aleinu Shabbach is a beautiful, beautiful tefillah. And it seems so strange. Throughout the year, it's sort of put at the very end of the tefillah. You know, certainly for guys, they are taking their tefillin off prematurely most times when they are saying Aleinu. And I don't know about others, but you're thinking about the day ahead and what's coming on, and there's breakfast, and there's this, and there's... And Aleinu sometimes gets short-changed. And all of a sudden, come the Yom Neroim, and it's put in the center point of all the tefillah. So prominent. The only time we bow down, we do, Kerem Mishdachim now, properly, is in Aleinu. 4 times on Rosh Hashanah. On Yom Kippur, and once on Rosh Hashanah. What's Aleinu all about? So there's a beautiful idea that I saw. Again, I saw it in Rabbi Reisman. He says this. When Klal Yisrael were in trouble in the Chet of the Egel, Moshe Rabbeinu begs on our behalf that Hashem shouldn't destroy us. And as part of the tefillah, if you look in the first box, number 4, he says, by the way, anyone listening online, just email me, j.golka@gmail.com, and Blinedar will email you the sheet. The pasuk says, "Uvameh yivoda eifukim otosichin beinecho anivamecho." How will I know, says Moshe Rabbeinu to Hashem, that I found favor in your eyes, me and my people? Then I and your people will be distinguished from any other nation. What does he say? Moshe Rabbeinu is saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, after the Chet, we still want to have this special relationship with you. We want to be unique in your eyes. What exactly is he asking? So the Tav Sofer explains that Moshe Rabbeinu was worried. Till then, they had a special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Only 3 days earlier. But he was worried that Klal Yisrael would lose that unique status of having that special relationship with Hashem. Having a unique special relationship is a motivating sort of driving force in our avodas Hashem. And Moshe Rabbeinu was worried that they would lose it, and therefore that's what he davened for. Now, says Rav Sadia Gaon, that was exactly Yoshua's concern at the time when they're about to enter Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because in the Midbar, every single Jewish person knew that they had a special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because they're in the Midbar. They get the Be'er, they get the Mon. It's a miraculous existence. So they know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael have got a special relationship. But when they're going to go into Eretz Yisrael, and normal life sort of will now take over, they're worried that they won't realize that they've still got this special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, says Rav Sadia Gaon, Yeshua composed the Tefillah of Aleinu. What does Aleinu say? Aleinu l'shabeach Adon HaKol. We give praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shelo yosanu kugei ho'arotzos. He didn't create us like all the other nations. Shehem mishtachavim levavah, etc., etc. V'anachnu kerim mishtachavim. So we've got a special relationship that is such a powerful driving force, such a motivator in our Avodas Hashem, that we take that tefillah and we put it in the middle of the most pivotal part in the whole of the Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur davening to remind us that we have a special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it could be, as when I said this at the Yontif table, my wife added, very good ha'ara, she said, perhaps that's why we put it at the end of davening when we leave shul first thing in the morning. Because as we're about to go out and begin our day, the last thing we sort of say is Aleinu, a reminder that we have a special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that drives us in our Avodas Hashem. So what emerges from this evening's shir is this. A focus on four aspects of the change of tefillah that we make nowadays in this time of year in Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and in the Aseres Yemei Teshuvah. But there is a theme that pervades all of them. Number one, Zochreinu L'chaim, we're drawing on the fact, we put this bracha, even though it shouldn't really be in the first section of Shemoneh Esrei, but we put it there to say, to define, what is Chaim? It's a Chaim as demonstrated by the Ovis. And we're saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we've got a relationship, we go back a long way, that we come from good stock. That's what we're saying. And the second point of HaMelech HaMishpat, again, we're saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't just judge us, you know, in a rigid way. Apply the Mishpat HaMelech more flexible because we go back a long way. Zecher Bris Avraham, Akedas Yitzchak, etc., etc. And then we say Uvechein because we're drawing on the fact that we're a Klal Yisrael, that we're a bigger tzibur, we're an entity, and that's how we invoke the Racham of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And lastly, Aleinu is exactly that point. That we put Aleinu, which is meant to teach us, we have a special connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which motivates and drives us, and we put it in centerpiece in the tefillahs of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur to remind us that we have that special relationship. So the idea is that these awareness of having a special HaKadosh Baruch Hu should drive us, Mitzvah Hashem, to have a Gemar Chasima Tova, Lanu V'Lechol Yisrael. Thank you. I wish you a good Yom Tov, and Mitzvah Hashem will resume after Sukkot.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.